fast and ready to run, and she almost offered him the out, told him that if he needed to regroup, get some distance, she could handle Sarek's. She could hold it together until he knew how he wanted to handle things. But she knew from experience that running didn't solve anything, and time only made the pain more intense, harder to cope. And if she was right about Dale's issues, which she was sure she was, then time was one thing they didn't have.
The other day you said he had bad days. I assumed you were talking about his temper, he said, staring blindly out the window. How bad is it?
I don't know, she said honestly. He does a good job of covering it, and your mom plays into it. But in the past few months, it has gotten worse. At first, he was forgetting meetings, misplacing schedules, little things, which is why your mom hired me. But lately, he's been moody, agitated, forgetting important things.
Like the inspection.
She wished it were that simple. Last month, he came out of the supply closet and told me to find Garrett and have him restock the emergency supplies, she said, joining him at the window. Said he'd asked him to do it a week ago and wasn't about to wait for an emergency to happen. Ty's throat worked hard, and Avery ached to reach out and comfort him, but he had a distinct hands-off vibe going on.
What did my mom say?
She asked me if I would quietly restock the supplies, Avery admitted, her stomach knotting at the admission. I told her I would, then encouraged her to take Dale to the doctor. Ty finally looked at her, the lines on his face giving away just how hard he was struggling to maintain composure.
But she didn't.
I don't think so. I think she's too scared to find out the truth. But someone needs to, if anything, for the safety of the lodge and its guests. Ty looked back out the window, his eyes heavy with pain, his shoulders tight with the weight of the world.
He can't handle Sarek.
Even though it was a statement, she answered, not on his own. Ty's eyes slid closed with pain, and a wealth of empathy rose up inside of her.
I can't do this.
Yes, you can, she assured him. There was clearly a lot of love in this family, only it was tainted by what she was coming to understand was misunderstanding and a history of deep loss. And Avery liked to believe that history was only important when it guided the way to a happy future, and she didn't think Ty or his dad had been happy in a really long time. You'll have me on your team. He just looked at her. Let me help, Ty. She held her breath, expecting him to either fire her for sending out the ad without asking permission or tell her she was office bound for eternity. To her surprise, he did neither.
You can help me scout new trails tomorrow, he said.
Unable to resist, Avery placed a hand on his arm. It was tense and coiled, like the man. I wasn't just talking about Sarek. He slid her a look that sat somewhere between grateful and sorrowful, and it made her hand squeeze tighter.
I know, Angel. But right now I need to tackle something that I understand.
Are you at least going to talk to your mom? He cleared the emotion from his throat.
Yeah, but can we talk about something else for a bit?
You bet, she said, letting him know that he had her full support. Finding out something that had the capacity to change everything was overwhelming, and it was natural that he needed to focus on something that was actionable. Scouting new trails it is. With an appreciative brush of his hand over hers, he said,
It'd be good to see how long it will take a local to make the hikes versus an experienced hiker. Really? She paused.
Wait, are you saying I'm out of shape?
He smiled. It didn't reach his eyes, but it was better than the remorse he'd worn a moment ago.
I'm saying that I'd enjoy the help and the company.
Avery warmed at the thought of spending tomorrow morning out exploring nature with a sexy mountain man. Actually, she was looking forward to seeing him in his element, where he felt strong and in control, where his smile reached his eyes and her heart.
I'll bring the hot cocoa, she said.
Make sure mine has a shot or two of caffeine in it,
he said with a wink and headed toward the door. At the entryway, he stopped.
Oh, and check out the paper bag. It's way better than a sticky bun.
Avery watched him go, then raced over to her desk. Too impatient to wait, she picked up the bag and opened it, and her heart rolled over. It was a crown. Not fashioned from bar napkins and coasters like they'd agreed, but made from dried poppies and woven bark. It was breathtaking and proof that Tyson Donovan was beyond impressive.
Chapter 11.
Well, aren't you a welcome surprise?
Irene said to Ty as he hung his coat by the door. He wasn't so sure how welcome he'd be after they had a much-needed talk, but he pulled her in for a hug. Hey, Mom.
You're in time for tea.
I think I might need something stronger, he admitted.
Irene pulled back and studied him, like she had when he'd been a boy and she had the power to love away even the biggest of problems.
Rough day, huh? Well, how about some milk and cookies then? I have chocolate chunk peanut butter.
And like when he'd been a boy, Ty wanted nothing more than to sit at that kitchen counter, eat some cookies, and watch the worry disappear. But he wasn't that kid anymore, and this wasn't the kind of problem that was going to disappear. Finding Dale in the boathouse last night in nothing but a bathrobe and slippers while he searched for his tackle box had knocked some of the spite out of Ty. Watching his dad struggle to remember why he'd gone out there in the first place nearly knocked him to his knees. Dale Donovan was as tough as they came. Mentally, physically, and spiritually, he was untouchable. There wasn't anything that could break him. The man had buried his son without shedding a tear and disowned his other without a second thought. Garrett's death had seemed to make him harder, more rigid and remote. Dale was a tough son of a bitch who had become an island unto himself. That wasn't the man Ty had seen last night in the boathouse. That man had been lost and vulnerable, two emotions he never thought to witness in his father. Then he'd become flustered and agitated, and Ty was the closest target. Not that that was new. Ty had become used to being the focus of his father's disappointment for years. But this was different. And after his talk with Avery, Ty couldn't ignore that anymore. He had hiked a few of the more challenging trails, racking up 6 miles of brutal terrain in under 2 hours, hoping to clear his head, get a better perspective on the situation. Epic fail. He came back sweaty, exhausted, and no closer to a solution than he had when he'd first returned home. If anything, the situation with Dale left him feeling even more inadequate than ever. He'd come home to help his parents, something he couldn't do until he understood the extent of the problem, which meant pushing his mom for answers it didn't sound like she was ready to admit yet.
Make it a plateful of cookies and a tall glass of milk, Ty said as he walked into the kitchen and sat at the counter.
He looked at the stool next to him, and for the 1,000th time since Garrett's death, wondered if the emptiness would ever subside. When he'd been a teen, the loss had been consuming, and the only way to survive it, he felt, was to run. Now, experiencing it as an adult, he felt the crushing weight of the guilt.
but there was something new stirring inside of him. A deep desire to make it right. And that required a painful but truthful conversation. Irene slid a plate of 3 cookies, arranged like eyes and a nose, across the table and went to the fridge for the milk. When she returned, Ty decided the best thing was to face it head on. What's going on with Dad? Irene froze, her smile wavering at the corners.
Did you two have another argument?
That's not what I'm talking about, Mom. And you know it, he said with gentle steel. Irene busied herself with pouring Ty's milk.
It's just stress, I told you.
Ty rested a hand on hers, stilling her actions. One or two of the things could be explained away by stress. But the schedule, forgetting clients, the inspection, meeting a potential employee in his slippers, Mom. His freaking slippers. That isn't stress. That sounds more like memory problems. Maybe even some kind of dementia. Irene didn't answer right away. She looked at the counter, her hands, anything to keep her from meeting his gaze. Ty stretched his neck to the side until he felt it crack. If I'm way off base, then please tell me. But I can't help unless I know what's going on.
I told you all that I know, she admitted. The eye doctor said it wasn't night blindness, and that maybe it was stress and we should have it investigated more.
Then why is he refusing to go to another doctor?
Why do you think?
She snapped. And it was the first time Ty had seen his mother this close to frustrated helplessness since Garrett died.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take it out on you.
Ty rounded the corner and pulled his mom into his arms. That's okay. I know this is hard. I just need you to be honest with me about what's really going on.
That's the problem, she said, resting her cheek against his chest. Your father, oh, how I love him dearly, is the most pig-headed, stubborn man I know. He won't go to the doctor. I've made 3 separate appointments, even used getting his driving privileges back as incentive. But every time the appointment arrives, he's too busy or tired to go. And between trying to keep this business running and the guests happy, I don't have the extra energy to push right now.
Let me talk to him. See what I can do, Ty offered.
No!
Irene stepped back, her head shaking in a definitive way that left no room for argument.
You'll talk to him. An argument will ensue, and I won't see you for another 6 months. Or maybe a year this time. No, I won't lose you too.
You haven't lost me, Mom, Ty said, his stomach knotting to the point of pain. Was that how she'd viewed what had gone down? That she'd lost Ty too? You haven't lost me. My job just requires me to be near the ocean. Irene looked at him with knowing eyes.
It's not your job that keeps you away, which is why I want you to let me handle your dad, my way and in my time.
We might be running out of time, and your way is nothing more than covering for him, Ty pointed out. Hiding his illness from people, including me. Ty was shocked at the anger and betrayal he felt when he said that. Dad's only going to get worse, and one day your covering will get him hurt, or even worse, get someone else hurt. And trust me, that isn't a weight you want to carry, Mom. There was a tense silence that filled the room. Irene's face crumpled as she took in the truth behind Ty's words and the importance of his last admission. Ty wished he could take it back, hated seeing his mom so close to tears, but someone had to say something before it was too late.
You all make it sound like I need a goddamn keeper, Dale said from the threshold.
That's not what we mean,
Irene said, love in her eyes, taking a step toward Dale.
We're just worried about you.
Dale put a hand out, halting his wife from coming any closer, and Ty heard Irene let out a small sob. He'd never seen his dad wave off Irene's offer of love and comfort, ever. He might be a cold son of a bitch when it came to his son, but never to his wife. Dale's eyes went glassy as he realized what he'd done, but he stood firm.
I might not be in my prime, but I'm still the best guide on this mountain.
Then his gaze went to Ty, angry and challenging.
So unless you're ready to come home and take that title from me, then you best keep your concerns to yourself. This lodge can't take any more criticism right now, and I might not be perfect, but I get things done, and that's better than what you're doing.
It was past five, and Avery's cheeks hurt from smiling so big. She'd smiled all the way through the morning calls, when the phones were lit nonstop with locals wanting to volunteer, during the two-hour explanation to the senior extreme team about why there would not be a polar bear plunge this weekend, even lasting through her one-year checkup with her specialists, which included several jabs and a few needles. Now she was back at the office, checking her watch and counting down the minutes until she got to clock out and go for her ride. Mavis and the ladies were meeting her out front at 6:30 to send her off on her moonlit ride. Avery was in her baddest jeans, faded with strategically placed tears to give them a dash of vintage attitude, and Mavis's old riding jacket. It was butter soft, candy apple red, and so tight when zipped that it brought Avery from a respectable C to an impressive D cup. She'd even borrowed a pair of kick-ass boots from Grace. Not that they'd ever kicked any ass. Grace was a pacifist by nature. But they looked tough, and Avery felt tough. A sentiment she carried with her as she double-tapped her mouse and opened one of her impressive spreadsheets, then entered some figures like a ninja. She already had enough volunteers for the entire week of SAR-X, and she was getting ready to shut it down when her 12 o'clock appointment waltzed in, almost 5 hours late. Squaring her shoulders, she said, "You made it." Brody plopped down on the chair across from her desk and sprawled out as if he owned the place.
You wanted to meet for lunch. I never stand up a beautiful lady.
It's almost dinner time. He looked at his watch and shrugged.
My bad. I had a checkup on my ankle and it took longer than expected.
The finger-combed hair and faint hint of lip gloss told her that it had been a home visit. Well, you're here now, she said in her most professional tone. And I have to say, for a sprain as bad as the note implied, you look good. Way too good for someone who was in his second week of mandatory 3-week recovery, which happened to coincide with the last fall of powder for the season. He was in baggy sweats, a sliced-up-my-hood t-shirt that was from Oregon, and looked right out of the package. And a foot booty. Nice booty, Avery said. It was light blue, looked a little small for his foot, and removable. Brody gave it a pat.
Another week with this baby, then the doc said I'm good to return to work. Then it's all wilderness all the time. It's getting a little lonely at home, resting in bed all day long.
He winked.
You should come over, keep me company.
Avery stood and walked around the desk. I have a better idea.
Yeah?
Brody leaned back and rested his hands behind his head, striking a pose that had Avery rolling her eyes. Oh, yeah. She picked up a stack of files she had created, 36 in all. Each one represented a class Kelsar intended to offer at this year's training. Inside, she had detailed all of the necessities each class required. She dropped them in his lap.
Oh,
he said, jerking forward as the breath left his body. He glanced at a file, opened it, and then gave a broody frown.
What is all of this?
That is adulthood, Avery said with a smile. It's time you paid it a visit, You can get your feet wet by reading the requirements of each class, then filling out a location request for where you think each class should be staged and held. Many of the classes need the same type of terrain and are taught by the same instructors, so be sure to cross-check and cross-reference so you don't book two classes on the same trail or an instructor in two classes at the same time. Brody set the files back on her desk.
No can do, babe. Doctor said he can't clear me for another week.
Avery sat on the corner of her desk. That means you can't help with any of the prep for the event, but you'll be healed in time to benefit from the free admission you get as a lodge employee. Brody shrugged his shoulder as if he'd just realized that.
Guess I'm lucky it was only a sprain.
Me too, Avery said, because had it been a break, you wouldn't have been able to do anything but lounge around watching Comedy Central all day in bed.
If I was in bed, I wouldn't be watching television.
He winked. Avery ignored him. According to this doctor's note, though, a sprain exempts you from field work, but not office work. He sat up.
But I'm not a coordinator, I'm a guide.
Right. Avery picked up the handbook and flipped to the section that covered training and special events at the lodge. But during big training events, every member of the team is required to pitch in and help prepare in the weeks prior. It's why you get free admission into the events. And since you aren't cleared to help scout trails and test rappelling gear with the chopper runs tomorrow, you get to stay here, in the warm office. Avery picked up the files and plopped them on her desk.
I didn't read that part,
Brody said, as if his laziness was a viable excuse. Funny, because there's a box you initialed in your contract that said you read and understood the entire handbook, Avery informed him. If you want, I can call Dale since he did your interview and ask him how to proceed. She couldn't tell if he was pouting or going to cry, but finally he shook his head.
Nah, guy wouldn't remember what we talked about anyway.
Avery considered putting her kick-ass boots to work, but decided that nothing was going to ruin her night, not even Brody. Great, then you can start with these, and whatever you don't finish tonight, you can work on tomorrow. But they'll need to be complete before I come in tomorrow at 11.
11? He stood. No way am I going to bust my ass to do your work so you can sleep in.
Oh, my day starts with the sun tomorrow. Since you're injured, I'm going out to scout trails for Sarex, which is why we need a list of places to start, she said, grabbing the jacket off the back of her chair, zipping it until she reached maximum cleavage, and heading for the door. Be sure to lock up when you're done.
Wait, what if I have a question about something?
Put on a harness. It might get you in the zone. Avery played it cool until she pushed through the side door of the lodge, which led to the parking lot. Once those doors closed behind her, though, she did a little victory dance, complete with some fist pumping and booty shaking. She hadn't walked softly, nor had she swung a big stick. Nope. A little gentle confidence was all she needed to make her mark.
Are you gonna do the chicken dance next? If so, I want to get my phone out and record it.
Avery spun around and found Ty wearing mirrored aviator glasses, a black leather jacket, and boots that were so battered they only added to the bad boy vibe that he had going on. He was also straddling a motorcycle and wearing a smile that said he was looking for trouble. Chapter 12. Avery knew that smile well, was so affected by its power that one flash and her body sighed a breathless, oh my. What are you doing here? She asked. He looked down at his bike and lifted a single brow, which in itself wasn't a sexy gesture, but everything Ty did sent her hormones into a frenzy.
Going for a ride. You?
Oh, just waiting for Harris.
You might be waiting a while.
He leaned forward, resting his arms on the handlebars in a move that was all male grace and swagger.
He got a call out. Something about hikers in a snowstorm.
How sad for him. Avery tilted her head and studied the sky. The sun was setting as a gentle evening breeze blew the scent of poppies and pine across the lake, and there wasn't a single cloud in sight. A snowstorm on a perfectly beautiful spring night?
Some freak blizzard or something.
She walked over and stopped short of the front tire.
Shouldn't you go help then? Nope. I'm on vacation for another week, so I figured I'd start enjoying myself.
His gaze dropped to her cleavage.
Nice jacket.
She ran her hands down the front. It's Mavis's, and the kick-ass boots are Grace's. She looked around the parking lot, surprised to find it empty. Where are Mavis and the girls? They're supposed to be here.
Mavis stopped by my mom's earlier while I was there. She said she has a big date tonight, and the ladies are helping her get ready. I guess she went to a funeral yesterday and met some retired football player who's helping her improve her passes.
I don't think she needs any help in that department.
Me either, Ty said. I'm pretty sure she goosed me the other night at the brew house. She feigned innocence, but I wasn't buying it.
She's fast.
Not as fast as this bike.
The cool timbre of his voice rolled down her spine and liquefied her entire body. So you met with your mom? She asked, and the way his mouth tightened told her it hadn't been a good chat. She took a step forward and placed her hand on his. Do you want to talk about it?
I want to talk, but not about that, he said,
flipping his hands over so that he could lace their fingers.
I heard you were looking to check some more things off that list of yours, and I figured we worked so well together last time, we should give it a second go-round.
Understanding and respecting his need for a distraction, Avery said, we already had a second go-round on Cedar Rim. She bit her lower lip.
Then we had a third go-round, a few hours ago in my office.
So to be clear, what kind of go-around are you offering? Avery prepared herself for some witty comeback or charming line, but she welcomed the warm surprise when instead he said,
the kind where we talk and laugh and maybe do some kissing by a campfire. Okay, we'll definitely do some kissing. Lots of kissing by a big fire.
He grabbed her by the hips and steered her around to his side.
And touching, too.
I like touching, she breathed. To demonstrate how much, she ran her hands up his chest to his shoulders, the leather softening as she went.
Me too,
he said with a voice as rough as tossed gravel. What happens when the fire burns out?
I don't think that's our problem, Angel.
A flutter ignited and settled right beneath her belly button. No, burnout wasn't going to be a problem. If anything, their chemistry increased with every look, every touch, every single sexy grin he threw her way.
Remember, the fire's so big, it will take a long time to burn. Maybe all night, but I promise when it finally does, we'll both come home feeling a hell of a lot lighter than when we left.
His thumbs dipped under the hem of her jacket and rubbed the naked skin beneath.
What do you say?
Avery didn't know what to say. It was quite possibly the most romantic thing anyone had ever said to her, and her head was trying to catch up to her heart. I guess I want to know if you know how to drive this thing fast. Like, burn rubber down the interstate with only the moon lighting our way fast, she asked. Because according to Mavis, this was important stuff.
I was born fast.
He lowered his voice to the panty-melting level that she loved.
That's not to say I don't appreciate a little slow action now and again. So what do you say? You, me, and the stars?
Maybe it was the boots, or perhaps the jacket, Or maybe she was too excited over the possibilities of what the next few hours could hold. Because even though Mavis wasn't there to see her ride off into the sunset, Avery still felt like tonight was a success. So she took the helmet and said, "I want to fly."
"That's my specialty," he whispered.
Without another word, Avery climbed on, wrapped her arms tight around his torso, and whoosh! Ty gave it gas, and they tore up the windy mountain road, gaining so much speed the pine trees blurred by, and their bodies pressed tighter and tighter together until there wasn't an inch of space between them. Her front was so plastered against his back that she could feel every curve, every hard-won muscle moving and shifting with the bike. And she could feel all of the rules and expectations and pressing history fade into the night sky as the sun dipped behind the mountain range. Most importantly, she could feel thighs of steel and that butt definitely tight enough to bounce quarters off. Within moments, a million stars began to shine through the inky sky, lighting the road and dancing off the river to their side. She could hear the water rushing around the side of the mountain and over the rocks, stirring up an earthly smell of sprouting moss and moist clay. A hand tightened on her thigh, and over the wind, she heard,
"You ready to fly?"
Avery had been born ready. It had just taken her body 27 years to catch up, and she wasn't going to wait another minute. "I'm ready!" At the words, a heady mix of thrill and terror pumped through her body, causing her hands to lock around his waist so tightly she was sure he couldn't breathe. As if sensing her unease, Ty placed his hand over hers and gave them a comforting squeeze.
"I got you, Avery."
Avery wanted to believe him. Wanted to know what it felt like for someone to carry her burden, the weight of not knowing what tomorrow held. But life had taught her better. Her mother, her father, even Carson had promised to love her forever. But love wasn't enough to go the distance. Ty was different, though. He wasn't asking for her love. Wasn't even asking for more than a night out under the stars. He just wanted her to take this ride with him. And something about the capable way he handled his world made giving herself over to this moment feel easy. Right.
"I'm glad someone does," she said,
loosening her grip slightly. His hand came to cover hers, as if saying, "Don't let go." His chuckle carried on the wind as they crested the top of a ridge, and then started to circle down, hugging the mountain as they drove toward the glowing moon. "It feels like flying," she thought, closing her eyes and letting her head tilt back. Every cell in her body seemed to hum to life at the same exact moment. Her chest tingled, her hands shook, her stomach went into a free fall, and Avery felt as if she'd earned a set of wings. Being young and carefree was a foreign concept. Avery had spent her childhood caring for her mother and until recently waiting for the green light to start living. But Mavis was right. Straddling a motorcycle with a good-looking man pressed to her front made Avery feel invincible.
"Where are we headed?"
she asked. But it didn't matter. Wherever they ended up would be the start of her biggest adventure yet.
"To hell," Ty thought as he dismounted the bike, took Avery's hand, and led her down to the river's edge. He was as aware of how good she felt by his side as he was that his time here was winding down. He should have run in the opposite direction the second Harris showed up with his bike and this ridiculous plan. Only the opposite direction led to dinner at his parents', and Ty couldn't stomach another argument with his dad. Not after today. He didn't have it in him. Fighting his dad, the guilt, the uncertainty, the overwhelming itch to pack up and head back to his beach and the simple existence he'd created. He didn't have the energy for it. Not when he had the possibility to lose himself in the one person who always managed to make him smile. And man, oh man, when he'd seen Avery in the parking lot, dancing as if no one was watching, her life's motto, it seemed, he'd been unable to tear his gaze away. Her hair had been loose, her jeans snug, and she had on this red jacket that was designed to make a man think about taking it off, slowly. But it was how she approached life, as if every day had the potential to be amazing, that fascinated him, calmed him, made him feel connected to something pure.
"You seem to know exactly where we're going. Do you come here a lot?"
she asked, their hands swinging as they walked. Ty never considered himself a hand swinger, but tonight it felt good. "I know nearly every inch of these mountains, but yes, I've spent more time here than other places."
"Ah, the secret high school hangout," she said,
when they reached a circle made from felled trees enclosing a makeshift fire pit.
"Did you and Harris used to bring girls up here? Sweet talk them into skinny dipping?"
"My brother and I used to come here to camp, fish, get away from Dad. Sometimes Harris would come along," he said. "But no, you're the first girl I've brought here. As for the skinny dipping part, that depends if it's on your list."
"It's not on the list," she said, sounding as disappointed as he felt.
"We can add it."
"The list doesn't work that way," she said, disappearing behind a tree to pick up some twigs.
"Your list has rules?" Ty set his pack next to one of the logs and went about gathering some dry kindling. "What am I saying? Of course it has rules. You probably read some handbook on how to make a bucket list."
"It's not a bucket list. It's a memory journal."
She appeared from behind an outcropping of trees holding a pile of dried needles.
"And tonight, we'll both benefit from my need to read handbooks, because I'm going to make fire."
She made a flint rock and a tiny pocket knife appear out of nowhere. Where she'd been hiding it, Ty could only guess. He eyed her jacket, which barely had enough room for her cleavage, and decided she must have stashed it in her jeans.
"Stand back and be amazed."
Ty considered keeping quiet, letting her have her fun. But he knew that in the mountains it didn't take long after the sun went down to drop from chilly to butt-ass cold. "Or you could use this." Ty pulled out a lighter and held it in the air. She contemplated her options, then smiled.
"Lighter tonight? Tomorrow, I'll make fire from the batteries and wires in my flashlight."
"Your call," he said, but she already had the lighter in hand and the tinder smoking. Within minutes, the soothing crackling of the fire filled the air, and they were seated next to each other on the ground, using the log as a support. They weren't touching, but she was close enough that he could smell the heat of the fire mixing with the sweetness of her perfume. It was a heady combination. Ty dug into his bag and pulled out a bag of marshmallows.
"Are we making s'mores?" she asked, her smile so bright it was contagious.
"Better." Ty stuck two marshmallows on the end of a pointed stick and handed it to her. "Put that over the fire until they get golden and your hands get warm." Currently, they were a degree above frozen. He dug through his bag and pulled out a thermos, two camping mugs, and an emergency blanket. Draping the blanket over her legs and tucking her in, he turned his attention to the thermos, which he shook and poured into the mugs.
"What is that?"
A surprise. She tried to peek over his shoulder to see what was in the mugs, but he waved her off.
"You know what I like better than surprises?"
He slid her a glance. "Skinny dipping?"
"Being in on the surprise. So how about you tell me what you're doing, and I promise not to tell anyone."
He held out his hand. "Marshmallows ready." With an adorable huff, she pulled the stick out of the fire and handed him a perfectly toasted one, then made a big show of slowly licking her fingers clean. Focused on the task at hand and not getting his hands on her, Ty stuck the toasted marshmallow on the rim of the mug like a garnish in a cocktail, then handed it to her. Lit by the fire, Avery's eyes sparkled when she looked up from her mug.
Did you make me a campfire s'mortini?
Not just any campfire s'mortini, but the current Girl Scout leader's special s'mortini. She said the secret was in the toasted marshmallow. You're supposed to take a bite with each sip.
In that case,
she plucked the last marshmallow off the stick and held it out to him.
Take a bite.
Never one to say no to a pretty lady, Ty did just that, making sure to snag her fingertip in the process, making her laugh. She had such a cute laugh, so he did it again, this time kissing the tip when he was through and making sure to lick off every piece of sticky treat. Those baby blues took in his pack, then met his gaze.
This is a lot of equipment for a last-minute night ride. Some people might think this was a little more premeditated than you previously let on.
Some people might think you should enjoy your surprise and drink up.
Are you trying to get me drunk?
If it will up my chances of getting skinny dipping added to your list, then bottoms up, he said and saluted. She took a tiny sip, no more than a thimbleful, then said,
I already told you, it's not a list, it's a journal. And that's not how it works. I can't just say, oh, hey, I feel like kissing a sexy guy under the stars and then add it.
You sure have a lot of kissing in that journal. He paused. And you think I'm sexy? Hey, he said when she nudged her shoulder to his.
Is that really all you heard?
A good guide focuses on the important details, he said with a teasing tone, then speared two more marshmallows and held them out over the flames. So I'm guessing sex under the stars with a sexy adventure guide isn't on the list?
Not last time I checked.
He shrugged. That's okay. I'm not a first date kind of guy anyway. This time when she nudged him, she didn't pull back. Instead, she rested her head against his shoulder.
Thank you for making this night special. I know you have a lot going on. Between your dad and Sarex, you probably feel like the world is pressing down on you. Yet you took the time to bring me a pine cone.
I promise if there's a pine cone in there, I got the recipe wrong. She tilted her head up, her hand going to his chest, resting there as if it was at home. He could feel his heartbeat against her palm, slowing its rhythm with a simple touch.
No, a thoughtful gesture, like the pine cones you and your brother and dad would bring your mom for Christmas.
Ty found himself chuckling. I'd forgotten about that. Every year we'd bring her home a different kind of pine cone to decorate the table with. I have no idea why she loved them so much, but she'd always tear up. Every year, like she was surprised by another big bag of pine cones. He felt the weight of Avery's gaze, as if she was staring right through him.
It wasn't the pine cones, Ty. She was crying because it meant your dad took you boys out and made a beautiful memory.
Ty thought back on those trips as some of the best times he and Garrett had spent with their dad. There were no lectures, no regimented routes or schedule. Each one was a real father and son in nature kind of trip with the only goal to find the best pine cones of the season. They would cook over a campfire, bathe in the river, see who could come up with the dumbest joke. They traveled as far as 13 hours south one year to bring back the biggest type of pine cones in the country. And Ty remembered coming home happy, laughing while they retold all of their stories over dinner. He wondered if his dad still remembered any of those times. Sometimes that man was as sharp as a tack and determined as a grizzly. Other moments, Ty barely even recognized him. Even worse, after some online research, he now understood there were probably days Dale barely recognized himself.
I know coming home hasn't been easy, she said quietly. And that Dale makes it even harder. But he's happy that you're here.
I don't know about that.
I do.
She ran her hand down his chest. The motion was meant to soothe, but there was something intoxicating about the gentle steel in her touch
and his entire body felt the jolt. You're a good son, Ty.
Ty didn't know how to respond to that, especially after today. So when she nuzzled into him, he wrapped his arms around her and held her tight. He told himself it was because he'd felt her shivering. But the truth was he liked touching her. Felt like he was at peace when he held her. The silence stretched until it became a comfortable and warm blanket that surrounded them both. Avery stuck a marshmallow on the stick, and he held it over the fire until it was good and golden. Then she plucked it off, and they shared it. They did this a few times while listening to the river ramble in the distance. The night continued to grow. But in their cocoon by the fire, it felt as if time had slowed enough to breathe. Slowed to where the hollow ache that had taken up residence in his chest a decade ago felt lighter. And his itch to run faded. He didn't know how long they sat like that, toasting marshmallows, watching the embers float into the inky sky, and silently listening to the wind whistle through the pine trees. But it didn't matter. Ty wasn't sure he'd known what true contentment felt like before tonight. In fact, he'd always thought the word had a negative connotation. Who wanted to be content when you could be pushing the limit? But sitting there, staring at the fire with Avery curled into his chest, he was pretty sure he'd take this over jumping out of a chopper any day.
Ty?
Yeah, he said, and she shifted so she could see him. He tried to meet her gaze, because he could tell by the tone she had an important question, but the angle was just right. The zipper on her jacket had given a little under the pressure, and he could see straight down. Bright blue lace and creamy cleavage. Hot combo.
Is this what you and your brother used to do?
She asked, and he was no longer wondering if her panties were a matching set. Cuddle by the fire? Ty asked, then waited for his body to backfire at the mention of Garrett, waited for the dark memories to settle and the guilt to kick in. Only, it never came, and he had a pretty good inkling it had something to do with the woman in his arms. Nah, Garrett wasn't much of a cuddler.
Too bad. He missed out.
Then, not giving him the change of topic he was hoping for, she looked up at him through her lashes.
Is this where you came to talk? Blow off steam? Find your balance? I know your dad's dementia has made things worse, and that under all of the bluster, he has a big heart. But I don't imagine he was an easy father.
I wasn't all that easy to raise, Ty heard himself saying. And then, because he couldn't shut up, he added, I was actually a pain in the ass, always looking for the line so I could cross it, see what would happen. I never met a rule I didn't want to break, my dad would say, and since he lived his life by the rules, it made for some heated moments. Some frustrating moments, too. What Ty had seen as genuine curiosity, his dad had taken as disobedient and willful. When he was little, Ty tried to curb that itch, trying to make his dad happy. By the time he became a teen, he realized his dad would never be pleased, so he stopped trying.
Kids are supposed to test their parents. It's part of being a kid, she pointed out.
When I was 11, my dad and I found this big ravine on the west side of the mountain. He said a hiker stranded without gear could never make it out alive. The next day, I went back alone and scaled that 200-foot cliff without any gear.
Did your dad find out? She asked.
Oh, yeah. I was so proud that I figured it out, I went home to tell him. He took one look at my ripped jeans and bloody shin, and he knew. The crazy part is, I really thought he was going to be proud of me. Ty could still remember the frustration and disappointment burning in his gut, frustration that he was in trouble, and disappointment that he hadn't managed to impress the most impressive man in the world to him. He grounded me for the entire summer, which in my dad's world is the equivalent of being disowned. At least that's what it had felt like. He had been cut off from his friends, the mountains, and any connection between him and his dad had become beyond strained. And Ty never knew how to close the gap. Where Dale was happy to walk the same trail day after day, Ty craved diversity. His mind liked to solve impossible problems. It was what made him the best at what he did. Yet, he'd never managed to solve the one problem that mattered the most: how to gain his dad's support. "Not the homecoming you were looking for," she said, her arm tightening around his middle. He said that one day my curiosity was going to get someone killed. He threw the stick into the fire. He just always assumed it would be me. Did he actually say that? At his pain-filled expression, she sat up, hers turning fierce. He had no right to put that on you. Garrett and I got into some pretty squirrely situations growing up. Two boys living in a lodge with the Sierra Nevada as their backyard, trouble was bound to ensue. Sometimes Garrett was the instigator, sometimes it was a collaboration. Like the time we caught a bobcat in a coon trap and tried to leash train it. But usually it was me. He looked into the fire until the flame became a blur of bright reds and oranges. That night, it was me. "Oh, Ty," she said gently, taking his hand in hers. Talking about that night never got easier, but reliving it through Avery's expressions would be painful, knowing that she couldn't hide what she was feeling to save her life. Ty gave a gentle tug and pulled her back to his chest, then rested his cheek on the crown of her head. "I was offered a spot to go with my uncle and the Sierra Mountain team to climb the 14s in Colorado. I would have been the youngest person on the team. I was so excited I told everyone at school before asking my parents because I was so sure they'd say yes. When I got home, my dad didn't even listen. He just said no, that if I wasn't old enough to climb River Rock, I wasn't old enough to go backpacking all over the country." He could still feel the gut-wrenching humiliation that his dad wouldn't support him in this, couldn't see the same potential in Ty that others did. "So I figured if I could prove to him that I'd tackled River Rock, then he'd have to let me go." She nuzzled closer, her arm going across his waist.
"So you snuck out?"
"The second the sun came up, Garrett was in my room ready to go. I told him he didn't have to suffer through being grounded with me. It was a 2-day trip, so we were bound to get caught. He said he might be younger, but he wasn't weaker, and no way in hell was he going to let me hog all of the victory." God, Garrett was a competitive son of a bitch.
"Did you make it to the top?"
"No. It started getting dark before we cleared the ridge. I wanted to sleep for the night, find shelter, and pick up in the morning. Garrett wanted to get to the top before nightfall. The hardest part was out of the way, and all that was left was a short hike. That way, if Dad came looking for us and dragged us back, we could say we made the climb. Prove he was special." It had been a wet winter, so the river was wild and the ground was still saturated. Fatigue combined with limited light and loose soil made for poor conditions. Garrett took a wrong step and slipped down a bank and right into the river. Ty shook off the memory. "I scrambled down as fast as I could and found him, but even when I got to the shoreline, I knew. He was bleeding pretty bad. His body was going into hypothermia, and the helplessness of watching his brother slowly slipping away, knowing that he didn't have the skills to save him, still haunted Ty. I thought for sure my dad would come looking for us. but the search team didn't show up until the next morning. And by then, he was gone. They found Ty on the ground, holding Garrett to him and rocking him back and forth. It took three men to pry him away. And even then, Ty's arms circled around his own middle, as if he was still holding Garrett. Ty didn't remember the chopper ride home or much of the days that followed, only the overwhelming numbness that settled in his soul and never left. Without Garrett, Sequoia Lake was no longer home, and as long as he stayed there, his family could never move on.
"That's why you went into Swiftwater Rescue," she said softly, resting up on her elbow to study him.
She looked so long, Ty was scared of what she'd see. What kind of conclusions she'd come to about his character, about him. He knew what other people thought, what his dad thought, but for some reason Avery's opinion was the only one that seemed to matter in that moment.
"What a beautiful way to honor his life," she said, and Ty felt his throat close.
And that was it. The moment that Ty knew he was in serious trouble. What others saw as him running away from his past, Ty did to make sure the past never had to happen to another family.
"He'd be proud of the man you became."
"Don't make me out to be more than I am, Angel." She was starting to get that hero worship in her eyes, which could only lead to disappointment for both of them. Rescuing people is different than being a hero.
"I'm not looking for a hero," she said with a conviction so strong he had no choice but to believe her. "And I know exactly who you are, Ty. You're the kind of guy who, after a trying day, went out of his way to make my night special. First with a moonlit ride, then a campfire and some martinis."
"Don't forget the marshmallows," he whispered.
"I haven't forgotten anything," she said, her eyes big and luminous.
Her heart was right there on her sleeve, and she radiated so much warmth, all he had to do was reach out and grab tight. Only, he was afraid he'd never want to let go.
Chapter 13. Ty was a goner. He saw the kiss coming, watched as she moved in, licking her lips in the process, but he still wasn't prepared for how hard she rocked his world. It felt like he took a freight train to the chest. In his defense, it wasn't just a kiss. It was a high-octane, 0 to 1,000,000 meeting of the lips that left no room for questions. Avery was an all-in kind of woman, so it shouldn't have been a surprise that she'd been an all-in kind of kisser. Hell, they'd kissed before. But this was different. It was more, and she was making it clear that it was more. She wasn't shy about what she wanted. And lucky son of a bitch that he was, right then she was making it crystal fucking clear that she wanted just one thing. Him. Again with the lucky, because he wanted her too, bad. So when she placed her palms flat against his chest for leverage and scooted up on her knees, he ran his down to her hips to help steady her. He was a gentleman after all. And when that wasn't enough, he slid them lower to that denim-clad ass to let her know that he was there for her. She seemed to appreciate his efforts, even making this sexy little purring sound as she crawled up his chest until she was straddling his lap, as if afraid he had somewhere else he'd rather be. Fat chance. He'd meant what he'd said earlier. He wanted to kiss her all night. Long, open-mouthed kisses that blurred into one another until the sun rose or they passed out. He didn't care, as long as he woke up with her in his arms.
Avery seemed to be on the same crazy train with him, only she was in the driver's seat, taking her sweet ass and making his lap into her own personal chair, which was a-okay with him. She could make him anything she wanted as long as she didn't stop kissing him. So when she gently tugged his lower lip between her teeth, he let himself fall into her sweetness. Or maybe he'd fallen when he'd caught her scribbling obscene offers on his truck. Either way, she got to him. In the best possible way. At the worst possible time. His instincts were screaming for him to pull the cord, reminding him that she was a from this day forward kind of girl. He was leaving in a week and needed to leave this well alone. But he'd spent his entire vacation leaving things alone. The past, his dad, the relentless guilt, and look where that had gotten him. Spending his days saving a lodge that was one frayed rappelling rope from snapping, and his nights playing Marco Polo with a man who didn't comprehend that he was lost. So for just a moment, Ty wanted to be the one who was lost because he was certain that Avery would find him, bring him back. To where and from what, he didn't know. But when he was with her, he felt his world turn right.
"You taste like some more teeny," she said, her face flush and her lips swollen.
"You taste like, I'm not sure." Framing her face with his hands, he took another taste, long and languid, and when he pulled back, they were both breathing heavy.
"Still not sure?"
she whispered into the silence. "I might need another sample." She wrapped her arms around his neck and her legs around his back.
"Sample away."
Ty groaned, and she was laughing as he kissed her, and man, she had a great laugh. It filled the air and lit him up from the inside out until he couldn't feel anything but her. Her joy, her passion, her zest for life. It was intoxicating. She was intoxicating. She tasted like campfire and wild nights, but she kissed like lazy mornings in tangled sheets and, man, oh man. She locked those boots of hers low on his hips, encasing him between her thighs and bringing all of their good parts into mind-blowing contact. With a low growl, he took over. Delivering a kiss that burned hotter than the fire roaring behind them. She must have felt the heat too because her hands fisted in his hair and she purred into his mouth. And holy hell,